and welcome to this fresh episode of the ISCN podcast, the podcast of the International Smart Cities Network. My name is Leah Hemmetsberger, and my guest today is Brian Bedolli, CEO of the Norwalk Redevelopment Agency. Norwalk is a city of approximately 90,000 inhabitants and in the vicinity of New York. And Norwalk is leveraging the power of community and data for a greener and more walkable city. Let's hear it all from Brian. Brian, welcome to the podcast of the International Smart Cities Network. It's a pleasure to have you here today. And first of all, tell the audience, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, so thank you, Leah. It's a pleasure being here. My name is Brian Bedolli. I'm the executive director for the Norwalk Redevelopment Agency. I'm also a lecturer at the College of Architecture, Planning, and Landscape Architecture at the University of Arizona. Also a PhD student at TU Berlin. So I have quite a few hats that I wear in my professional career. But outside of that, I'm proud to say that I'm a musician. And I know, Leah, we've talked about that in the past. But it infuses my work, and I'll probably make some musical references that, you know, might be a little esoteric throughout this, but that's the reason why on the front end.
All right. Thanks, Brian. You do wear a lot of hats, but we're focusing a little bit today on your first hat that you mentioned, that you're the CEO of the Norwalk Redevelopment Agency. And before we dive into the really tough questions, well, maybe this is a tough question, I don't know yet. What's your favorite place in Norwalk?
That is a very good question. It's a tough question, too. So I don't think you've been to Norwalk, right?
I've never been, no.
Okay, very good. So I'll try to paint a picture here for everyone. So in terms of my favorite place in Norwalk, I'd say it's definitely in the South Norwalk area. That's what we would refer to as the downtown. But the best spot there, I would honestly, it's kind of odd, but I'd have to say is the top of the roof of my building, of our office building. So we happen to be located in the tallest building in Norwalk. So we get a really nice view of everything, and we're situated right in the downtown. So when you go up to the roof deck, our building management has made it very nice, you know, grill, seats. It's a very nice rooftop terrace. And then you get to overlook Norwalk. So you get a 360-degree view. You see the coast, you see the Long Island Sound, which is effectively the large body of water just to the south of Norwalk. What I really love about it is I get to see all of our projects coming to life in real time. So I could quite literally go up on our roof and take a look at probably 10 out of the 12 ongoing investment projects we have at any given time. So I like to tell my, you know, contractors that I'm watching them at all times, that they don't know that I may be up on the roof, making sure they're working. But yeah, we get to see our infrastructure investments, which I know we'll probably talk a bit about today. We get to see various sites for redevelopment that are, you know, going. And we also just get to see great views, which can never be beat.
That sounds awesome. And it sounds a little bit like an invitation to everyone that's listening. So if you guys are in Norwalk, just knock on the door of Redevelopment Agency and ask for Brian and the good view, I would say.
Please do. Please do. Open invitation.
Sounds fantastic. As head of the Redevelopment Agency, Brian, can you tell us what exactly the RDA, the Redevelopment Agency, is and how it links to sort of what the city of Norwalk is doing?
Yeah, no problem. So effectively, the Norwalk Redevelopment Agency is what we would legally refer to as a quasi-public entity in the United States. So we're very much a city agency, but we sit a little bit outside of the city typical structure. And that's by design. We have a board, and the board members are appointed by mayors over the years. So they each serve five-year terms. So it'll be a different mayor, perhaps, that could appoint, you know, one individual versus another. And we were started over 50 years ago as part of HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Urban Renewal Program. And the idea was to create an external agency responsible for economic development, involved in housing development, but with a little bit of an arm's length from the political nature of a typical city structure. So that's why we sort of have this advisory board, and we get involved, you know, in a variety of economic development contexts. Primarily our responsibility as it stands today, you know, it's evolved quite a bit over the years based on various policies that come out from the federal, state, and local government. But effectively what we do in practice today is we are responsible for negotiating all of the land development deals for the city. So when we have a developer that may be interested in, you know, building in Norwalk, whether that's multifamily apartments, commercial property, primarily focused in the downtown as sort of our jurisdiction, we get involved. So we help to serve as that liaison between the private development community and the city of Norwalk, really trying to create a more expeditious response to development to help them navigate, you know, the more challenging aspects of entitlements, which is sort of the land development regulations that are involved to build a building of that scale. And also trying to develop public assistance packages for infrastructure primarily. So that gets us involved in transportation, land use, climate resilience has been a big focus in recent years. And really just trying to make it easy to as easy as possible to develop in Norwalk, to attract those resources to the community and grow.
All right. I also saw on the website that you're basically, among those many things that you just mentioned, also responsible for ICT development, like using infrastructure, data, sort of also the smart city aspects of it. Or is that, like, did I misunderstand?
No, yeah. So we are primarily the primary agency that's involved in that with the city. We operate that very closely with the city. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when we talk about ICT or integration of sensors in the roadway or utilization for sort of environmental resilience purposes, we want to make sure that that data is getting fed to the most direct source of individual that can, you know, utilize that information. So we've sort of taken a coordinating role in that regard. And I think that's part of that is because of sort of our agency's ability to touch multiple areas. So we're not sort of in one specific department, we're spread across. And when we think about data sharing and we think about data silos, I think it's good to have some sort of entity that is able to transcend departments to help break that down. So that was sort of the natural fit. And then I think the other piece of it was just sort of my background. The city of Norwalk didn't really have a smart city program or anything like that before I came to town about 5 years ago. And, you know, in terms of my background, I had worked with SAP prior. I've done a lot of work in the future city space over the last 10 years. And we really just try to infuse that into our work. We all bring our individual perspectives. And I think that was one that sort of blossomed into something that was of interest to the city.
Yeah. And talking about your background, I mean, I also stalked you a little bit in advance. but basically, you have an urban planning background, right? Which is, as you just described, infused with all this sort of technical touch points and smart city touch points.
Yeah, I always joke, especially to my real estate development friends, that I'm a recovering planner. So I think...
Why is that? Why recovering?
It's always the joke, you know, when I talk about trying to make things expeditious and get things done on focused on implementation, the joke is that, you know, planning may not do that. But I think that's not fair. I think I'm just... Any planners out there, I am definitely... I have a master's in city planning. I teach planning. It's the first most necessary step to even, you know, effectuate good policies. But that's the poor joke choice that I've decided to make.
But talking about policies, I'm getting you out of the poor joke now. Earlier this year, I also saw, and you also touched already a little bit on this topic, you in Norwalk and as the RDA together with the city, you launched or issued the Sustainable and Resilience Plan. And I'm curious, so what was exactly the reason that you thought this was necessary for Norwalk?
Yeah, so there's several reasons. And I think the number one reason is that there was a community demand for it. We've heard from multiple layers of the community, from elected representation on the city council, also just general members of the community in terms of when they voice their concerns about things they're experiencing, whether that have been flooding, issues with heat, other things that they've experienced in Connecticut. It made it easy for us to take this up as a planning initiative. And I think what was really driving it is ultimately the human experience in Norwalk. People have been feeling the impacts of climate change. It's a coastal city. It's a small coastal city. There's, you know, in their daily lives from either more frequent storm events. But one of the big things that I think really brought it to the forefront in people's minds, and fortunately, unfortunately that it happened, fortunately that it brought awareness to the sort of local population, was Hurricane Sandy. I don't know if you're familiar with Hurricane Sandy in 2012.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wreaked havoc on the Northeast in general. You know, a lot in New Jersey and New York, but also Connecticut got hit really, really bad. And I think we were somewhat fortunate in that because the timing of the tides at the time that we didn't see the level of surge that unfortunately they saw in New Jersey and New York. But it really, well, it of course created devastating amounts of damage in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So it really woke people up to, okay, climate change is here. It's real. We're going to have to be dealing with this more regularly. And that has sort of carried forward over the past decade. I've worked in Connecticut. You know, I started working in Connecticut in about 2008. And I saw this transition in terms of how people were, you know, discussing the environment, what they were willing to invest, what they thought that the important policies were. So what we did is when we started to identify this interest, you know, and people saying, hey, we need to really figure this out, is we partner with the Nature Conservancy. And I think they're active internationally. I think they're in about 70 countries. But they were pretty active in Connecticut. One of a good friend of mine was the director of science for the Nature Conservancy. And I had actually worked in them in my past life. I was the director of the Regional Council of Governments in the Bridgeport region. And this was right at the time of Hurricane Sandy. And we pulled together a community resilience workshop. And effectively, we brought together, before we even started the sustainability and resilience plan, we convened city staff, all the stakeholders, elected officials, to just have a conversation about what are the issues, what should this plan look like, and how important is it that we do this? And what that did was generate a list of findings, which sort of served as the initial tinder for the the sustainable resilience plan. Another poor joke if you're reading into that one. But yes, we convened the stakeholders and brought that together so that we started the plan. Because this was one of the key findings of the community resilience report, was to develop a sustainability and resiliency plan.
Nice. And how? So you basically said it came out of the community, but was it also tough, or was it hard to get all these stakeholders of the community on the same table, or was it like an easy task because everyone was already involved in that after Hurricane Sandy?
Yeah, I mean, it was relatively easy, I would say, because we were sort of, you know, leading it, but also being somewhat reactive to things that were, you know, of interest to the community. So what we did is we effectively created a series of roundtables in the community resilience workshop setting. And then when we actually took the plan up, one of the things I think is an important distinction is the city recognizing what the community demand was for these sort of resilience improvements said, okay, this is great, but we want to make sure that, you know, at the end of this, we're able to deliver. So what we need to do concurrently to this, what we need to first do, and one of the sort of comments that made is, you know, put your oxygen mask on before assisting others, is we wanted to have a strong administrative internal look. So getting those people together was very straightforward and easy because they all realized this pressing demand of sustainability in the community, you know, is there. And they need to align their internal organizational structures accordingly. So what we did is, you know, that was the first step. And then now the sustainability and resilience plan that's been developed, it now has a list of recommendations, implementation actions, and also recommended that the city hire a chief sustainability officer, which is quite literally, we just did interviews this week to pick up the charge and then now go into that larger community engagement exercise, I think sort of that's being referred to right now, to get community support behind investment in projects. So I think there's just a key distinction to be made there in terms of what the sustainability and resilience plan did, its focus, and then the next steps.
Nice. Sounds like you have your act together in Norwalk, definitely. You just mentioned like hurricanes and flooding, but you also mentioned already the risk of heat waves in Norwalk. So you're actually really looking towards different challenges at the East Coast. Why is sort of this topic, extreme heat events, so critical? And how are you currently looking towards addressing these issues?
Yeah, so I think it's obviously a global issue, but temperatures in Connecticut have been rising in recent decades and are projected to continue to rise in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, and as a result, Norwalk's going to experience warmer climate, consistently higher temperatures, you know, and fewer frost days per year. And it's projected by 2050, the average annual temperature is expected to rise about 5 degrees above the historical average. And I think with these heat waves that are occurring, number one, we're experiencing drought conditions more regularly. Number two, the urban experience, you know, we're in an urban environment where people need to walk, people need to expose to the elements a little bit more than I think some of the suburban parts of Connecticut. It creates a quality of life issue. And I think the quality of life issue is actually exacerbated in the lower income parts of the community. So when we talk about why it's so critical, the number one reason that I would have to give is that there's a strong equity component to what's going on with heat. You know, a lot of the more affordable, quote unquote, areas or the lower income areas in Norwalk are devoid of, you know, a solid tree canopy. So you have this really compounding effect for the urban heat island that is dangerous ultimately when we do have these heat instances, when the heat waves come. which is a public health emergency effectively that needs to be managed. So that's number one point of critical public health and safety when it comes to heat. But also, again, just wanting, if we're going to be pushing recommendations to align our land use with transportation, asking people to walk more, we need to be sensitive to these things that may be impeding that from happening. So I think it's almost, apart from the equity issue, which I think is at the forefront, it's also an impediment or a challenge that we need to overcome to implement our land use and development plans.
That's super exciting, actually. When you say sort of also, you identified that there is not enough or basically no trees in certain in low-income areas. How did you find that out? Was it basically just from data that you already had, from analysis that you did?
Yes,
or just walking the streets?
My favorite four-letter word is data. So I think that is exactly how we decided to figure that out. And we took a look through our resilience plan and looked at the tree canopy and figured out where that was occurring and overlaid that with the socioeconomic information. So we took a very data-driven approach to this. And I think what's come out of it now is, I don't know if we'll get into it later, but we talked about we're setting up a sort of urban data platform that will allow us to collect all of this information so that we can do these interrelational analyses a lot easier, where we want to basically take a look at the environmental data, take a look at the heat data, take a look at the socioeconomic information, and develop locations for real-time sensor networks from there. So that's sort of our next step in the next phase. What we're trying to do is actually purchase some of these heat sensor units so that we could monitor our progress in the future.
That's actually a good point, monitoring progress. I think this is something that we can dwell on a little bit longer. You have a couple of, you mentioned it, 11, 12 projects that you're currently working on. You have some goals that you stated sort of also in the sustainability plan. Like, how are you aiming to measure this impact? Like, is it also just via data? Can you do this all via quantitative data?
Yeah, so I think, again, when I made the joke about being a recovering planner, what I was hearkening to is my real intense focus on results and implementation. So what we did is when we took that information, we set out on these plans to say, okay, we want to develop a plan, but we don't want it to just be a document that sits on a shelf. We want to figure out a way to focus on how we're going to implement this and conduct performance monitoring moving forward at the start of the plan. And that's the first thing I told the consultants we were working with. That's the first thing I told the community, is that we're not just trying to create a document that has, beautiful graphics, although I do stand by the graphics in our documents, but that we want to create a framework for implementation and performance monitoring in the future. So that was part of the discussion from the get-go. So in order to do that, we had to basically take a baseline snapshot of where we were on a variety of key performance metrics that we identified, whether that's either heat, coastal flooding, whatever, the GHG analysis that we did, so that we at least have a base point to start from in terms of evaluating our performance. And then in order to do the performance evaluation phase, we need to have a structure and a framework and also the technology to do so. So what we're looking to do then is to have annual or biannual or even real-time updated information through the sensor networks that we're going to be deploying that can be pulling in this data so that we can track our performance based on the policies and the decisions that we make in the future.
That sounds like you've actually thought it through. Where are you currently in that phase? Like you said, you were currently in the sort of beginning of building up a data platform. You're also looking towards procuring sensors, a sensor network to sort of measure lots of these criteria and indicators. Where are you currently, and what is your specific next step to make this
happen? So I think you understood it pretty clearly in terms of where we're at now. So we basically set up the institutional framework. Leading into that too, one of the key points we had to focus on was data governance. That was a workshop that we held concurrent to all of this, recognizing we can't do any of this unless we get our IT providers, our IT staff, interdepartment heads on board with what we're doing before we just start coming at them with sensors to go install in the roadway. So we basically did that, set up the urban data platform. We're in the process of procuring, and in January, February, we hope to actually install the first set of the sensors. Concurrent to another one of our planning efforts in South Norwalk in the community plan, we identified locations for these. So we're pretty clear in terms of where they should go and why. And then the point is that we'll have the data feeding in to our urban data platform so we can visualize it, respond, and react over the next year. You know, we're going to be, we have a good strong baseline now on our sustainability front from a number of metrics, but it's still very much a pilot. You know, I think one of the things to mention about Norwalk, you know, we're 90,000 people. It's a small community. So we're trying to make these incremental steps that actually achieve value for the departments in the community that have called for it. So I think a lot of that's focused around mobility. A lot of that's going to be focused on equity. And the other use case that we're working on is going to be focused on heat.
What were your sort of key learnings up to this point where you're now in sort of this journey of building this up incrementally? Anything that you can share with our listeners, stuff that you should not do or stuff that you should particularly pay attention to when you're on this journey?
Yeah, and I know obviously every municipal organization is different, but I think some lessons that could be learned are just being very open-minded and having the ability to listen to people that may not be so familiar or think so data forward in their workflows when they approach a certain issue in a city. So I think, you know, the key thing is to involve your IT staff early and often. There's definitely resistance in Norwalk. There's resistance in other communities that I've experienced, you know, because it's in their mind, a lot of people's mind, it gets equated to more work for, you know, even though there's an efficiency argument to be made globally, the immediate task ahead is hard when you're managing an entire IT infrastructure for a city. And that becomes even harder when you're a small city and you're responsible for so many different things that it might be hard to think about adding things on. But I think what we ended up doing to help navigate that is at the redevelopment agency, at least, was to find some grants to identify ways that we could expand the capacity so that they weren't really having, nothing really was thrown on their shoulders to implement this. You know, money helps often, but I think what it did, the intent wasn't to have this funding source to sort of delay any impacts for a short term. And then, you know, down the road, you know, it hits them. I think what it is it gave us the time to get people comfortable with the new sort of approach to managing urban environments. And then now we're having conversations with IT professionals about what this new data platform can do as opposed to should we or should we not do it. I think the ultimate lesson there is just involve people early and often, make sure that you're listening to their concerns, and then try to figure out ways to address them. You might be able to help them with a separate problem, which was one of the things we ended up being able to do on the GIS front. You know, we were having discussions about trying to get our use cases up, our data up, and we were able to relieve some of the city staff of some tasks on the GIS front that ultimately, you know, it was a good transactional relationship that's helped us evolve.
A little bit of quid pro quo. Yeah.
Negotiation. Nice. We call it negotiation.
Yeah, whatever you call it, but it can also be helping each other, right? So this is quite nice. But thanks a lot for sharing these insights also with the fellow listeners. One thing that you mentioned just now is grants. And I read that you actually were quite successful, as you just mentioned as well, in acquiring some grants, especially one for improving infrastructure and bicycles. And you mentioned it already before, you're trying to improve walkability of the city. I'm wondering sort of what will be your first steps towards changing sort of the face of transportation in Norwalk? What are you doing specifically in this regard? And maybe also, where does data come in relation to urban planning here?
Yeah, so we're super excited. We were successful in receiving a $14 million grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation. It's referred to as the RAISE program, which is, I think, Rebuilding America's Infrastructure, Sustainability, and Equity, if I'm pronouncing it correctly or saying it correctly. And what that effectively does for Norwalk is it provides us to take a look at a main artery that connects two very important parts of our downtown to the train station. One of the key goals and focuses we have in Norwalk is to better align our land use and transportation network through transit-oriented development. We're fortunate, we're about an hour commute by train to New York City. So just even though we're a small 90,000 community, we're still a subset of New York in a lot of ways. So what we want to do is try to bring people as close as possible to live near the train station to help reduce the impact on our roads, to help decrease vehicle trips, auto-based trips, improve walkability, improve bikeability. So what the $14 million RAISE grant was intended to do was just that. We basically are going to be taking a look at a long stretch 2.2 miles. I'm not sure if that really translates within this ecosystem. We would say what? I don't even want to try to convert it on the fly, but a nice long aspect of like segment of road that connects our train station with increased bike lanes, usable sidewalks, really re-envisioning it as an urban boulevard that transcends our downtown, almost as a statement piece that this is kind of what we're trying to do from a urban planning perspective in the community. And secondarily, what we've been doing leading up to that is what we call, we developed a complete streets policy. I think you call them streets in Europe. It's basically a road that accommodates all users from bikes, pedestrians, and autos in one road. And I think that's very important for a town like Norwalk, because everything has been designed for the car in most instances. Mm-hmm. And this step forward to help sort of, you know, get that mode split moving around to more sustainable forms of transportation.
Interesting that you call it complete streets. And in many cities, at least in Germany, we're also still struggling to get a bike lane on a street. There's big fights over it, as you might have noticed also living in Berlin currently. So yeah, I think we all have similar struggles, but I guess it's quite well known that in the US it's fairly vehicle-centered sort of in cities. Actually, I looked it up also now in parallel. 2.2 miles are 3.5 kilometers.
Perfect.
But yeah, just fun fact at this side, because I would have also no idea how to convert this on a regular basis. So it's pretty exciting what you're planning at the moment also for downtown Norwalk and making the city more walkable. Also, I've read that you're planning to change transportation and also introduce digital messages, like real-time information. Why is this important for you, do you think? Real-time information on transit, for example.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that up. I think that was sort of, that's the third component of our RAISE grant, actually, is to develop what we're referring to as intelligent transportation system or wayfinding. And I think the importance of that is when you're dealing with such an auto-centric environment, one of the things that you need to focus on is how to be competitive and making it a convenient option for people to maybe choose the train, to ride their bike, walk, instead of hopping in the car. So one of the things we find, and I found this, you know, I think this is found internationally, sometimes just the mere fact of knowing when the next bus is coming or knowing when it might be delayed or having that information in real time helps the user experience in a transit network. And so that's one thing that we want to enhance, so that when you're getting off the train, you know, from Manhattan to Norwalk, you know when the next bus is coming. You may know intelligently how to navigate to the downtown via digital wayfinding signage and just these checkpoints to improve the convenience and ease of access in the user network.
That's also quite interesting point that you just raised, the fact that you should be looking towards user experience, but like also customer service. You mentioned also before that you're working with the community in Norwalk, and maybe this is also something, the understanding of community, what is a community? From my understanding, what you told us, community is also the stakeholders, politicians, but different units within the city. And the user experience would then also be the citizens, people living in Norwalk. How are you planning actually also to involve citizens in the whole planning, in the whole reshaping of sort of the face of Norwalk? Are they all on board already? Do you have the feeling? Have you already done something? Or is this now all in the making as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to think everyone's on board and we're not going to have any issues. That sounds great. Where we stand today.
Ideal utopia.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing's wrong in Norwalk. Don't worry about it. One thing that is an important point is that concurrent to us pursuing these grant funds. And one thing I can mention too, with the $14 million grant, don't give up out there. That was our fourth time submitting that the same application. the fourth time is the charm. So that is one point. But the second point is that gave us a lot of time to work with the community to make sure that it was actually maybe what they wanted in some low resolution sense, at least. So as we were, you know, we submitted this grant, but it was being fed by the work we were doing with the South Norwalk Community Plan. So we actually we've had about a year long planning exercise directly with residents, directly with the community to answer questions, not just, you know, what don't you want, really to define what do you want and how can we help get you there. So it's focused on quality of life. We created this overall umbrella that there's a lot of things that are, you know, challenging in your day to day, but let's think about it a little upstream. And what does quality of life mean to you? You know, what does that mean for your children? What does that mean for the community? And let's really be precise in terms of what that looks like and how we need to get there. So that ranged from, you know, enhanced urban environment, enhanced pedestrian networks. It ranged from, you know, more trees on the street, more community and social programs for children or daycare while people are working. Also, you know, truck traffic that people were concerned with, just the noise that they were experiencing, very specific things. Mm-hmm. And we tried to basically infuse that information that we got from the community into this grant application. And we kept changing the grant application in response to this feedback. I'm not saying it's a perfect, you know, a perfect program that is a silver bullet to address all of these issues, but it's nice when you're at the end of a planning phase to say, okay, here's our implementation. Oh, and by the way, now we have $14 million to go do X, Y, and Z. That'll give us that sort of charge to the implementation focus that I try to maintain throughout the plan.
Nice. I really like how you sort of also use the feedback from the community also in order to improve and change. And, you know, it's not just copy pasting the application every time. You make it sound like that in the beginning, but it wasn't actually the fact.
Well, yeah, I think what's interesting is, you know, a lot of these grant applications, they want to hear that community story. They want to understand. So in the United States, you know, when we think about scale, it's massive, right? Connecticut's very small, but the United States is very big. So when we put an application in for Norwalk, Connecticut, we send it to Washington, D.C., you know, the reviewer there may not even know what a Norwalk, Connecticut is in the first place. And that's okay. So we need to paint that picture. And I think what really helped us paint that picture is that lived experience that we obtained from that community feedback. And I think that ultimately helped us in our grant.
Nice. That's actually a really nice story. I like that, to be honest. When we come back a little bit to what you said earlier, that you love a specific four-letter word, which is not love, which it's data. Can you explain a little bit more why data for even for a city the size of Norwalk, you mentioned it before, 90,000 inhabitants, is so important? Because sometimes there's the idea of, oh, data and smart and intelligent cities, however you want to call it, that's just something for the big guys. But I mean, you're showing it's not. It doesn't matter how big you are in that case.
Yeah. So I think, you know, a few things. I think the number one sort of practical utilitarian application that I have for why I like to infuse data into the plans, even at the scale of Norwalk, is that it helps us navigate emotionally charged issues. And I think that is the number one thing when we went through the plan in terms of people feeling that, you know, certain conditions exist because of X, certain conditions exist because of Y, and it's your fault, it's their fault, it's his fault. What we're able to do is basically take data and actually show whose fault it is. Hopefully it doesn't end up being mine, but I think it doesn't lie in that sense. You know, if we're being transparent with our process, it serves as a really great focal point for these hard discussions. So when, you know, we did this through the South Norwalk plan, we went out, the first step, we hired our consultants, we took an input, okay, what are the issues? We went out, figured out what data was affecting these issues, and then we presented that to the community. We said, okay, here's the amount of bike lanes that you have, here's the number of days you're experiencing heat, here's this problem, here's that problem, and here's the numbers to back it up. How do you feel about this? Like, what do you think is going on here? And we have an honest discussion, just kind of asking and listening to how people's perspective may or may not change based on the presentation of new information. So I think that's number one. And number two, I think, is that it provides, it's the only pathway towards monitoring performance in a meaningful way, from my perspective. And that might be a grandiose statement, and it might seem overly general, but I really don't see another way to keep things transparent from a public side of things, to keep things honest from a public sector side of things, to make sure that we are just monitoring our improvements and monitoring our failures, you know, and making sure that we're making adjustments in the policies that we make are being monitored in real time. And I think that's important. And I think thirdly, why data is so important is if you have a really robust data framework, that can transcend the politics. If it's something that goes forward for year after year after year, and data becomes an active part of people's discussion in terms of how they evaluate their performance, how they evaluate the performance of their staff, how they evaluate the performance of the policies, having this monitored framework, either annually or biannually, whatever it looks like, can transcend administrations, political administrations. And I think that helps keep the community going long term.
I would actually love to sort of see this. I hope you're right on this one. One aspect also that you mentioned is, or touched upon a little bit, is, you know, the matter of transparency. Are you planning also to publish sort of the achievements, the measurement of the indicators publicly, so that your citizens and everyone in the community can actually follow up on this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that we've always envisioned is whenever we do plans now, we want a performance dashboard at the end of it. We want to basically say, here are the key things we intended to achieve from the plan. Mm. Here are the key performance indicators of what we should be examining. And take a look, public, here's a link, monitor our performance with us. You know, and I think it's scary. I think it's, you know, being transparent, I think, you know, people, it's like, it's accountability. Ultimately, it's accountability, but that's okay. Mm. I think that's important. And I think that we need to basically create these frameworks. And to the point of transcending administrations, I think what the point is that if you're able to embed this sort of workflow and this sort of way of thinking into departmental city administration workflows, that's how it carries forward. It's not necessarily just a policy or force thing that could be taken out. It's that, no, maybe your planning and zoning director or maybe your economic development official thinks about what information that they could use moving forward to help attract a business or help, you know, monitor, you know, the performance of their public work staff. And that just becomes a sort of integrated approach. And it's, that's similar to what we're talking about from a sustainability perspective. We want sustainability at the tip of the tongue of every official in every department. And that's what we hope for data as well.
Nice. That's almost like ideal closing words, right? I don't dare actually ask another question, but maybe to come to the last question from my end, where do you see Norwalk in terms of data and urban development within the next 5 years? I mean, you mentioned a little bit the step-by-step approach, and yeah, what's your sort of midterm vision for Norwalk on the industry?
We're going to be that first community with the flying cars that they were talking about.
Are you sure you want this?
I've always said that. Like, I think people have a hard enough time with left and right. I'm not ready to talk about up and down.
Me either. 4D is not for me.
Me as well, I'll be honest. I could, you know. Okay, so but in actuality, where do I see Norwalk in the next 5 years, you're saying? Was that the question? I'm sorry.
That was the question. No, don't worry.
Very good. So I think you're going to see a lot of leaps forward from the bicycle and pedestrian planning work that's been done. We have a lot of money in the hopper for infrastructure. So what I'm hoping is it's going to, you know, sort of become that that coastal Connecticut community that really got bike lanes and pedestrian lanes right, that's connecting the train stations like we talked about. And that's in the near term. I mean, we have, you know, we raised millions of dollars now with all these grants and federal resources to do just that. So I think the urban forum is going to change quite a bit. The mayor himself has said that he wants Norwalk to become the greenest city in the state of Connecticut. So that is a lofty charge, lofty ambition. But I think now that we're hiring our sustainability officer, I think what you're going to see is a lot of the things that are on paper today are actually going to become integrated into the built environment. So I think that's the greatest hope I have, you know, in the short to midterm. I think developing it with a focus on sustainability and data as a key sort of concept within our planning frameworks, hopefully will transcend as well, and that you'll be able to go onto these websites 5-10 years from now and see the performance monitoring that we talked about today.
Nice. I'm very curious, and I will definitely follow up on this. And also what I really love about sort of moderating this podcast is that you can see so many universal things, and it doesn't matter if you're based in the US or if you are a city in Uganda, like Masaka, which I recently talked to, where I talked to the mayor of Masaka. And basically she also had a very similar vision. She wanted her city to be greener, cleaner, more livable. And I just love how every city is, no matter where they stand, they're taking up sort of data, they're taking up the interaction with the community, and everyone in a different way and maybe in a different sort of stage they are, but with a similar ambition. And I really love this. So thanks so much, Brian, for sharing the story of Norwalk today with our listeners and also with me. And thanks for taking the time. It was a real pleasure to have this conversation with you today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was nice to speak with you. And everyone's invited to Norwalk whenever you're in town. Let me know.
We will all take you up on this, Brian, for the beautiful view from your office, for sure. Thanks, Brian.
Take care. Thanks.
My key insight of today's conversation with Brian Bedolli is to always ensure that the community is involved and to talk early and often with the main stakeholders within the city. This way, you ensure that everyone's on board for innovative projects. Thanks for listening today and stay tuned for the next episodes.